Hello, my darling, and welcome to today's story time. We have a cozy fire and blowing wind to help you fall asleep. And now, on with our story time. It was the pure language of the world. It required no explanation, just as the universe needs none as it travels through endless time. What the boy felt at that moment was that he was in the presence of the only woman in his life, and that, with no need for words, she recognized the same thing. He was more certain of it than anything in the world. He had been told by his parents and grandparents that he must fall in love and really know a person before becoming committed. But maybe people who felt that way had never learned the universal language. Because when you know that language, it's easy to understand that someone in the world awaits you, whether it's the middle of the desert or in some great city. And when two such people encounter each other and their eyes meet, the past and the future become unimportant. There is only that moment, and the incredible certainty that everything under the sun has been written by one hand only. It is the hand that evokes love and creates a twin soul for every person in the world. Without such love, one's dreams would have no meaning. McTubb, thought the boy. The Englishman shook the boy. Come on, ask her. The boy stepped closer to the girl, and when she smiled, he did the same. What's your name? He asked. Fatima, the girl said, averting her eyes. That's what some women in my country are called, he said. It's the name of the prophet's daughter, Fatima said. The invaders carried the names everywhere. The beautiful girl spoke of the invaders with pride. The Englishman prodded him, and the boy asked her about the man who cured people's illnesses. That's the man who knows all the secrets of the world, she said. He communicates with the genies of the desert. The genies were the spirits of good and evil, and the girl pointed to the south, indicating that it was there the strange man lived. Then she filled her vessel with water and left. The Englishman vanished too, gone to find the alchemist. The boy sat there by the well for a long time, remembering that one day in Tarifa, a Levanter had brought him the perfume of that woman, and realizing that he had loved her before he even knew she existed. He knew that his love for her would enable him to discover every treasure in the world. The next day, the boy returned to the well, hoping to see the girl. To his surprise, the Englishman was there, looking out at the desert. I waited all afternoon and evening, he said. He appeared with the first stars of evening. I told him what I was seeking, and he asked me if I had ever transformed lead into gold. I told him that was what I had come here to learn. He told me I should try to do so. That's all he said. Go and try. The boy didn't say anything. The poor Englishman had traveled all this way, only to be told that he should repeat what he had already done so many times. So then try, the boy said to the Englishman. That's what I'm going to do, he responded. I'm going to start now. As the Englishman left, Fatima arrived and filled her vessel with water. I came to tell you just one thing, the boy said. I want you to be my wife. I love you. The girl dropped her container, and the water spilled. I'm going to wait here for you every day. I've crossed the desert in search of a treasure that is somewhere near the pyramids. And for me, war seemed a curse. But now it's a blessing, because it brought me to you. The war is going to end someday, the girl said. The boy looked around at the date palms. He reminded himself that he had been a shepherd, and that he could be a shepherd again. Fatima was more important than his treasure. The tribesmen are always in search of treasure, the girl said, as if she had guessed what he was thinking. And the women of the desert are proud of their tribesmen. She refilled her vessel and left. The boy went to the well every day to meet Fatima. He told her about his life as a shepherd, about the king, about the crystal shop. They became friends. And except for the 15 minutes he spent with her, each day seemed it would never pass. When he had been at the oasis for almost a month, the leader of the caravan called a meeting of all the people traveling with him. He spoke. We don't know when the war will end, so we can't continue our journey. The battles may last for a long time, perhaps even years. There are powerful forces on both sides, and the war is important to both armies. It's not a battle of good against evil. It's a war between forces that are fighting for the balance of power. And when that type of battle begins, it lasts longer than others, because Allah is on both sides. The people went back to where they were living, and the boy went to meet with Fatima that afternoon. He told her about the morning's meeting. She responded, The day after we met, you told me that you loved me. Then, you taught me something of the universal language and the soul of the world. Because of that, I have become part of you. The boy listened to the sound of her voice, and he thought it to be more beautiful than the sound of the wind in the date palms. I have been waiting for you here at this oasis for a long time, she said. I have forgotten about my past, about my traditions, and the way in which men of the desert expect women to behave. Ever since I was a child, I have dreamed that the desert would bring me a wonderful present. Now, my present has arrived, and it's you. The boy wanted to take her hand, but Fatima's hands held to the handles of her jug. She spoke again. You have told me about your dreams, about the old king and your treasure, and you've told me about omens. So now, I fear nothing, because it was those omens that brought you to me. And I am a part of your dream, part of your destiny, as you call it. That's why I want you to continue toward your goal. If you have to wait until the war is over, then wait. But if you have to go before then, go on in pursuit of your dream. The dunes are changed by the wind, but the desert never changes. That's the way it will be with our love for each other. Maktab, she said. If I really am part of your dream, you'll come back one day. The boy was sad as he left her that day. He thought of all the married shepherds he had known. They had a difficult time convincing their wives that they had to go off into distant fields. Love required them to stay with the people they loved. He told Fatima that at their next meeting. She responded, The desert takes our men from us, and they don't always return. We know that, and we are used to it. Those who don't return become a part of the clouds, part of the animals that hide in the ravines and of the water that comes from the earth. They become a part of everything. They become the soul of the world. Some do come back, and then the other women are happy because they believe that their men may one day return. I used to look at those women and envy them their happiness. Now, I too will be one of the women who wait. I am a desert woman, and I am proud of that. I want my husband to wander as free as the wind that shapes the dunes. And if I have to, I will accept the fate that he has become a part of the clouds, and the animals, and the water of the desert. The boy went to look for the Englishman. He wanted to tell him about Fatima. He was surprised when he saw that the Englishman had built himself a furnace outside his tent. It was a strange furnace, fueled by firewood, with a transparent flask heating on top. As the Englishman stared out at the desert, his eyes seemed brighter than they had when he was reading his books. "This is the first phase of the job," he said. "I have to separate out the sulfur. To do that successfully, I must have no fear of failure. It was my fear of failure that first kept me from attempting the masterwork. Now, I'm beginning what I could have started 10 years ago. But I'm happy at least that I didn't wait 20 years. He continued to feed the fire, and the boy stayed on until the desert turned pink in the setting sun. He felt the urge to go out into the desert, to see if its silence held the answers to his questions. He wandered for a while, keeping the date palms of the oasis within sight. He listened to the wind, and felt the stones beneath his feet. Here and there, he found a shell, and realized that the desert, in remote times, had been a sea. He sat on a stone and allowed himself to become hypnotized by the horizon. He tried to deal with the concept of love as distinct from possession, but couldn't separate them. Fatima was a woman of the desert, and if anything could help him to understand, it was the desert. He sat there thinking. He sensed movement above him, looking up. He saw a pair of hawks flying high in the sky. He watched the hawks as they drifted on the wind, although their flight appeared to have no pattern. It made a certain kind of sense to the boy. It was just that he couldn't grasp what it meant. He followed the movement of the birds, trying to read something into it. Maybe these desert birds could explain to him the meaning of love without ownership. He felt sleepy. In his heart, he wanted to remain awake, but he also wanted to sleep. "I am learning the language of the world," he thought, "and everything in the world is beginning to make sense to me. Even the flight of the hawks." In that mood, he was grateful to be in love. When you are in love, things make even more sense, he thought. Suddenly, one of the hawks made a flashing dive through the sky, attacking the other. As it did so, a sudden, fleeting image came to the boy. An army, with its swords at the ready, riding into the oasis. The vision vanished immediately, but it had shaken him. He had heard people speak of mirages, and had already seen some himself. They were desires that, because of their intensity, materialized over the sands of the desert. But he certainly didn't desire that an army invade the oasis. He wanted to forget about the vision and return to his meditation. He tried again to concentrate on the pink shades of the desert and its stones. But there was something there in his heart that wouldn't allow him to do so. "Always heed the omens," the old king had said. The boy recalled what he had seen in a vision and sensed that it was actually going to occur. He rose and made his way back toward the palm trees. Once again, he perceived the many languages in the things about him. This time, the desert was safe, and it was the oasis that had become dangerous. The camel driver was seated at the base of a palm tree, observing the sunset. He saw the boy appear from the other side of the dunes. "An army is coming," the boy said. "I had a vision." The camel driver answered, "The desert fills men's hearts with visions." The boy told him about the hawks, that he'd been watching their flight, and had suddenly felt himself to have plunged to the soul of the world. The camel driver understood what the boy was saying. He knew that any given thing on the face of the earth could reveal the history of all things. One could open a book to any page, or look at a person's hand. One could turn a card, or watch the flight of the birds. Whatever the thing observed, one could find a connection with his experience of the moment. Actually, it wasn't that those things in themselves revealed anything at all. It was just that people, looking at what was occurring around them, could find a means of penetration to the soul of the world. The desert was full of men who earned their living based on the ease with which they could penetrate to the soul of the world. They were known as seers, and they were held in fear by women and the elderly. Tribesmen were also wary of consulting them, because it would be impossible to be effective in battle if one knew that he was fated to die. The tribesmen preferred the taste of battle, and the thrill of not knowing what the outcome would be. The future was already written by Allah, and what he had written was always good for man. So the tribesmen lived only for the present, because the present was full of surprises, and they had to be aware of many things. Where was the enemy's sword? Where was his horse? What kind of blow should one deliver next in order to remain alive? The camel driver was not a fighter, and he had consulted with seers. Many of them had been right about what they said, while some had been wrong. Then one day, the oldest seer he had ever sought out, and the one most to be feared, had asked why the camel driver was so interested in the future. He had responded, "Well, so I can do things. So I can change those things that I don't want to happen," the seer had asked. "But then they wouldn't be part of your future." "Well, maybe I just want to know the future, so I can prepare myself for what's coming," the seer said. "If good things are coming, they will be a pleasant surprise. If bad things are, and you know in advance, you will suffer greatly before they even occur." "I want to know about the future because I am a man," the camel driver had said to the seer. "And men always live their lives based on the future." The seer was a specialist in the casting of twigs. He threw them on the ground and made interpretations based on how they fell. That day, he didn't make a cast. He wrapped twigs in a piece of cloth and put them back in his bag. "I make my living forecasting the future for people," he said. "I know the science of the twigs, and I know how to use them to penetrate to the place where all is written. There, I can read the past, discover what has already been forgotten, and understand the omens that are here in the present. When people consult me, it's not that I'm reading the future. I'm guessing at the future. The future belongs to God, and it is only He who reveals it, under extraordinary circumstances. How do I guess at the future? Based on the omens of the present. The secret is here in the present. If you pay attention to the present, you can improve upon it. And if you improve upon the present, what comes later will also be better. Forget about the future, and live each day according to the teachings, confident that God loves His children. Each day, in itself, brings with it an eternity. The camel driver had asked what the circumstances were under which God would allow him to see the future. He responded, "Only when he himself reveals it, and God only rarely reveals the future. When he does so, it is for only one reason. It's a future that was written so as to be altered." God had shown the boy a part of the future, the camel driver thought. Why was it that he wanted the boy to serve as his instrument? The camel driver said, "Go and speak to the tribal chieftains. Tell them about the armies that are approaching. They'll laugh at me. They are men of the desert, and the men of the desert are used to dealing with omens." "Well then," said the boy, "they probably already know." The camel driver responded, "They're not concerned with that right now. They believe that if they have to know about something, Allah wants them to know. Someone will tell them about it. It has happened many times before, but this time, that person is you." The boy thought of Fatima, and he decided he would go see the chiefs of the tribes. The boy approached the guard at the front of the huge white tent at the center of the oasis. "I want to see the chieftains," he said. "I've brought omens from the desert." Without responding, the guard entered the tent, where he remained for some time. When he emerged, it was with a young Arab, dressed in white and gold. The boy told the younger man what he had seen, and the man asked him to wait there. He disappeared into the tent. Night fell, and an assortment of fighting men and merchants entered and exited the tent. One by one, the campfires were extinguished, and the oasis fell as quiet as the desert. Only the light in the great tent remained. During all this time, the boy thought about Fatima, and he was still unable to understand his last conversation with her. Finally, after hours of waiting, the guard bade the boy enter. The boy was astonished by what he saw inside. Never could he have imagined that, there in the middle of the desert, there existed a tent like this one. The ground was covered with the most beautiful carpets he had ever walked upon, and from the top of the structure hung lamps of hand-wrought gold, each with a lighted candle. The tribal chieftains were seated at the back of the tent in a semicircle, resting upon richly embroidered silk cushions. Servants came and went with silver trays laden with spices and tea. Other servants maintained the fires and the hookahs. The atmosphere was suffused with the sweet scent of smoke. There were 8 chieftains, but the boy could see immediately which of them was the most important. An Arab dressed in white and gold, seated at the center of the semicircle. At his side was the young Arab the boy had spoken with earlier. One of the chieftains spoke, "Who is this stranger who speaks of omens?" "It is I," the boy answered, and he told what he had seen. "Why would the desert reveal such things to a stranger?" asked the chieftain, "when it knows that we've been here for generations?" The boy responded, "Because my eyes are not yet accustomed to the desert. I can see things that eyes habituated to the desert might not see." "And also," thought the boy, "because I know about the soul of the world." The third chieftain spoke, "The oasis is neutral ground. No one attacks an oasis." The boy responded, "I can only tell you what I saw. If you don't want to believe me, you don't have to do anything about it." The men fell into animated discussion. They spoke in an Arabic dialect that the boy didn't understand, but when he made to leave, the guard told him to stay. The boy became fearful. The omens told him that something was wrong. He regretted having spoken to the camel driver about what he had seen in the desert. Suddenly, the elder at the center smiled almost imperceptibly. The boy felt better. The man hadn't participated in the discussion, and in fact, hadn't said a word up to that point. But the boy was already used to the language of the world, and he could feel the vibrations of peace throughout the tent. Now his intuition was that he had been right in coming. The discussion ended. Chieftains were silent for a few moments as they listened to what the old man was saying. Then he turned to the boy. This time, his expression was cold and distant. He said, 2,000 years ago, in a distant land, a man who believed in dreams was thrown into a dungeon and sold as a slave. Our merchants bought that man and brought him to Egypt. All of us know that whoever believes in dreams also knows how to interpret them. The elder continued, when the pharaoh dreamed of cows that were thin and cows that were fat, this man I'm speaking of rescued Egypt from famine. His name was Joseph. He too was a stranger in a strange land, like you, and he was probably about your age. He paused, and his eyes were still unfriendly. We always observe the tradition. The tradition saved Egypt from famine in those days, and made the Egyptians the wealthiest of people. The tradition teaches men how to cross the desert, and how their children should marry. The tradition says that an oasis is neutral territory, because both sides have oases, and so both are vulnerable. No one said a word as the old man continued, but it also says that we should believe the messages of the desert. Everything we know was taught to us by the desert. The old man gave a signal, and everyone stood. The meeting was over. The hookahs were extinguished. The guards stood at attention. The boy made ready to leave, but the old man spoke again. Tomorrow, we are going to break the agreement that says no one at the oasis may carry arms. Throughout the entire day, we will be on the lookout for our enemies. When the sun sets, the men will once again surrender their arms to me. For every 10 dead among our enemies, you will receive a piece of gold. But arms cannot be drawn unless they also go into battle. Arms are as capricious as the desert, and if they are not used, the next time they might not function. At least one of them hasn't been used by the end of day tomorrow. One will be used on you. When the boy left the tent, the oasis was illuminated only by the light of the full moon. He was 20 minutes from his tent and began to make his way there. He was alarmed by what had happened. He had succeeded in reaching through to the soul of the world, and now the price for having done so might be his life. It was a frightening bet. But he had been making risky bets ever since the day he had sold his sheep to pursue his destiny. And, as the camel driver had said, to die tomorrow was no worse than dying any other day. Every day was there to be lived, or to mark one's departure from this world. Everything depended on one word, Maktab. Walking along in the silence, he had no regrets. If he died tomorrow, it would be because God was not willing to change the future. He would at least have died after having crossed the strait, after having worked in a crystal shop, after having known the silence of the desert and Fatima's eyes. He had lived every one of his days intensely since he had left home so long ago. If he died tomorrow, He would already have seen more than other shepherds, and he was proud of that. Suddenly, he heard a thundering sound, and he was thrown to the ground by a wind such as he had never known. The area was swirling in dust so intense that it hid the moon from view. Before him was an enormous white horse, rearing over him with a frightening scream. When the blinding dust had settled a bit, the boy trembled at what he saw. Astride the animal was a horseman dressed completely in black, with a falcon perched on his left shoulder. He wore a turban, and his entire face, except for his eyes, was covered with a black kerchief. He appeared to be a messenger from the desert, but his presence was much more powerful than that of a mere messenger. The strange horseman drew an enormous, curved sword from a scabbard mounted on his saddle. The steel of its blade glittered in the light of the moon. "Who dares to read the meaning of the flight of the hawks?" he demanded, so loudly that his words seemed to echo through the 50,000 palm trees of all Fayum. "It is I who dared to do so," said the boy. He was reminded of the image of Santiago Matamoros, mounted on his white horse, with the infidels beneath his hooves. This man looked exactly the same, except now the roles were reversed. "It is I who dared to do so," the boy repeated, and he lowered his head to receive a blow from the sword. "Many lives will be saved, because I was able to see through to the soul of the world," he said. The sword didn't fall. Instead, the stranger lowered it slowly until the point touched the boy's forehead. It drew one droplet of blood. The horseman was completely immobile, as was the boy. It didn't even occur to the boy to flee. In his heart, he felt a strange sense of joy. He was about to die in pursuit of his destiny and for Fatima. The omens had been true after all. Here he was, face to face with his enemy. But there was no need to be concerned about dying. The soul of the world awaited him, and he would soon be part of it. And tomorrow, his enemy would also be a part of that soul. The stranger continued to hold the sword at the boy's forehead. He said, "Why did you read the flight of the birds?" The boy responded, "I read only what the birds wanted to tell me. They wanted to save the oasis. Tomorrow, all of you will die, because there is more men at the oasis than you have." The sword remained where it was. "Who are you to change what Allah has willed?" The boy responded, "Allah created the armies, and he also created the hawks. Allah taught me the language of the birds. Everything has been written by the same hand," the boy said, remembering the camel driver's words. The stranger withdrew the sword from the boy's forehead, and the boy felt immensely relieved. But he still couldn't flee. "Be careful," said the stranger. "When something is written, there is no way to change it." "All I saw was an army," said the boy. "I didn't see the outcome of the battle." The stranger seemed satisfied with this answer, but he kept the sword in his hand. "What is a stranger doing in a strange land?" The boy responded, "I am following my destiny. It's not something you would understand." The stranger placed his sword in its scabbard, and the boy relaxed. "I had to test your courage," the stranger said. "Courage is the quality most essential to understanding the language of the world." The boy was surprised. The stranger was speaking of things that very few people knew about. "You must not let up," he continued, "even after having come so far. You must love the desert. but never trusted completely, because the desert tests all men. It challenges every step, and kills those who become distracted. What he said reminded the boy of the old king. He continued, "If the warriors come here, and your head is still on your shoulders at sunset, come and find me." The same hand that had brandished the sword now held a whip. The horse reared again, raising a cloud of dust. "Where do you live?" shouted the boy as the horseman rode away. The hand with the whip pointed to the south. The boy had met the alchemist. Next morning, there were 2,000 armed men scattered throughout the palm trees at Al-Fayoum. Before the sun had reached its high point, 500 tribesmen appeared on the horizon. The mounted troops entered the oasis from the north. It appeared to be a peaceful expedition, but they all carried arms hidden in their robes. When they reached the white tent at the center of Al-Fayoum, they withdrew their scimitars and rifles, and they attacked an empty tent. The men of the oasis surrounded the horsemen from the desert, and within half an hour, all but one of the intruders were dead. The children had been kept safe on the other side of the grove of palm trees, and saw nothing of what had happened. The women had remained in their tents, praying for the safekeeping of their husbands, and saw nothing of the battle either. Were it not for their bodies on the ground, it would have appeared to be a normal day at the oasis. The only tribesman spared was the commander of the battalion. That afternoon, he was brought before the tribal chieftains, who asked him why he had violated the tradition. The commander said that his men had been starving and thirsty, exhausted from many days of battle, and had decided to take the oasis so as to be able to return to the war. The tribal chieftain said that he felt sorry for the tribesmen, but that the tradition was sacred. He condemned the commander to death without honor. Rather than being killed by a blade or a bullet, he was hanged from a dead palm tree, where his body twisted in the desert wind. The tribal chieftain called for the boy, and presented him with 50 pieces of gold. He repeated his story about Joseph of Egypt, and asked the boy to become the counselor of the oasis. When the sun had set, and the first stars made their appearance, the boy started to walk to the south. He eventually sighted a single tent, and a group of Arabs passing by told the boy that it was a place inhabited by genies. But the boy sat down and waited. Not until the moon was high did the alchemist ride into view. He carried 2 dead hawks over his shoulder. "I am here," the boy said. "You shouldn't be here," the alchemist answered. "Or is it your destiny that brings you here?" The boy responded, "With the wars between the tribes, it's impossible to cross the desert. So I have come here." The alchemist dismounted from his horse and signaled that the boy should enter the tent with him. It was a tent like many at the oasis. The boy looked around for the ovens and other apparatus used in alchemy, but saw none. There were only some piles of books, a small cooking stove, and the carpets, covered with mysterious designs. "Sit down," said the alchemist. "We'll have something to drink and eat these hawks." The boy suspected that they were the same hawks he had seen the other day, but he said nothing. The alchemist lighted the fire, and soon a delicious aroma filled the tent. It was better than the scent of the hookahs. "Why did you want to see me?" the boy asked. "Because of the omens," the alchemist answered. "The wind told me you would be coming, and that you would need help." The boy responded, It's not I the wind spoke about. It's the other foreigner, the Englishman. He's the one that's looking for you. He has other things to do first, said the alchemist. But he's right on track. He has begun to try to understand the desert. What about me? The boy asked. When a person really desires something, said the alchemist, all the universe conspires to help that person to realize his dream. The boy understood. Another person was there to help him toward his destiny. So are you going to instruct me? No, the alchemist responded. You already know all you need to know. I am only going to point you in the direction of your treasure. But there's a tribal war, the boy said. I know what's happening in the desert, said the alchemist. I've already found my treasure, said the boy. I have a camel. I have my money from the crystal shop. And I have 50 gold pieces. In my own country, I would be a rich man. But none of that, said the alchemist, is from the pyramids. I also have Fatima, said the boy. She is a treasure greater than anything else I have won. She wasn't found at the pyramids either, said the alchemist. They ate in silence. The alchemist opened a bottle and poured a red liquid into the boy's cup. It was the most delicious wine he had ever tasted. Isn't wine prohibited here? The boy asked. It's not what enters men's mouths that's evil, said the alchemist. It's what comes out of their mouths, that is. The alchemist was a bit daunting for the boy, but as the boy drank the wine, he relaxed. After they finished eating, they sat outside the tent, under a moon so brilliant that it made the stars pale. Drink and enjoy yourself, said the alchemist, noting that the boy was feeling happier. Rest well tonight, as if you were a warrior preparing for combat. Remember that wherever your heart is, there you will find your treasure. You've got to find the treasure, so that everything you have learned along the way will make sense. Tomorrow, he continued, sell your camel, buy a horse. Camels are treacherous. They walk thousands of paces and never seem to tire. Then suddenly, they kneel and die. But horses tire bit by bit. You always know how much you can ask of them. And when it is, they are about to die. And this, my darling, ends our story time for today. As always, I hope that you have very sweet and creepy dreams.